Life Audio.
How do we move forward when it would be easier to stay where we are and die? This is the question I ask every single episode of this show, every week. And if you've listened at all, you've heard me ask that question. We've talked about this so much, but again, to review, death is not always of the physical kind. Sometimes it is. But most often when we talk about death, we're talking about that spiritual and emotional and relational death. That death that is us on the inside, looking like we have it all figured out, projecting something different to those who are looking. But on the inside, we know that we're waving the white flag. The obstacles in front of us, the battles that we know we need to face, they're just too big. The traumas and the trials behind us, they have us grounded to them. We're chained to those, and it's hard to move forward. That's death, because we're not making progress. We're not moving forward in any meaningful way. But there is an alternative. The alternative is to march, putting one foot in front of the other, making progress, one decision after another, getting to a place where we can better impact the enemy that's in front of us. We don't have to have it all figured out. We don't have to know exactly how it's all going to work out, but we need to understand what to do next. And that what to do can be very, very simple. Put one foot in front of the other. Today, I have the privilege of sharing with you an interview with an incredible guest. Ron Simmons is my guest, and Ron has done so much in his life, but he's written a book, and he uses the analogy of a little red wagon to talk about what we talk about on this show. I would say march or die. He would say there are different functions of a wagon, as simple as it is. There's those who are pulling the handle and setting the direction. There are the front tires in the back. There's the area inside for the cargo or for a passenger to ride. We need to know our place. We need to know what it is we're supposed to do. But in all of it, we must continue moving forward. He says this, do the next uncomfortable thing. Take the next uncomfortable step. I love this interview. There's so much here. It's so rich. We talk about parenting. We talk about really just moving forward in life and then using this analogy of a red wagon, understanding our place. I'm excited to share this with you, and we'll get there in just a moment.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Scott. As a servant of God, wife, and mother of four, I understand the juggle of multiple roles and stages. That's why I created the Encourager podcast, to help guide us through the messy middle stage of life. Join me on the Encourager as we challenge the chaos and embrace harmony. Together, we'll create practical systems to balance your roles and fulfill priorities. And we will do it while having joy and energy for both home and work life. Tune in for inspiring stories and interviews, actionable tips, and methods to do both home and work life. Because here, we believe you can do all things, just not all at once.
Welcome back to the March or Die Show today. Again, very excited to share this interview with you in just a second. Before we get there, however, I want to remind you, please, if you have not yet subscribed to the show, very important that you subscribe. Again, you may love the show. You may listen every week. Perhaps you even remember to just log on and listen every week. I appreciate that, but subscribe. That helps me. That will help you by sending this content to you right away. If you haven't watched the video of this, most folks listen, but I do have a YouTube channel. Please go and check that out as well. You can find the YouTube channel, my social connections, the work that I do with Mighty Oaks, all of it at jeremystalnucker.com, jeremystalnucker.com. And I'd encourage you to go check that out. Again, there are so many different ways to look at the hardships, the difficulties, and the challenges of life. And I use the march or die analogy. But as I mentioned in the introduction, there's another analogy used by our guest today, that of a little red wagon. Ron Simmons is my guest, and he has recently written a book entitled, Life Lessons from the Little Red Wagon. Life Lessons from the Little Red Wagon. Ron has done so many different things in his life. He grew up in Texas. He has been an entrepreneur. He's built businesses, chairman of large businesses. He has been a state representative in the state of Texas. He's raised a family. So many things that he's been involved in that he is willing to share with us. And I'm very thankful for just the conversation. As you listen, you'll recognize that this was one of those conversations I really could have carried on for a long, long time. And I look forward to having Ron back on because there's so many different areas I'd love to dive into with him. And I just appreciate folks, man, who have done a lot and experienced a lot and overcome challenges and done it with grace and dignity and are willing to share that with the rest of us. So many people, they are just so interested in projecting this. I've always had it figured out. I've never struggled. It's always been easy. That they won't take the experiences of their life in a redemptive sense and use them to help others. And Ron is so helpful and so willing to be helpful. And I really, really am grateful for this conversation. So without further ado, my interview with my guest today, Ron Simmons. Ron, thank you for jumping on today. Man, I appreciate your time. I know that you have a lot going on in your life, but when I looked at the synopsis of your book and started to read, it is so in line with what I talk about every week on this show. I said to Lily, who reached out to you, we've got to have Ron on. So thank you for doing it. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad to do it, Jeremy. Absolutely happy to do it. Thank you.
As I mentioned, I struggle a little bit with the Texas part, but I can get over that. I can look past that if I need to. Just kidding. Just kidding to all the Texas people. I'm just kidding. Love Texas. Before we get into your book, though, and man, so many lessons and so much here. Can you talk about your background, your upbringing? To me, this is so important. And it's funny how people who have struggled in their lives and who have overcome difficulties and kind of come out on the other side, if they're willing to, they can take that and use it in a redemptive sense for others. And I think that's fantastic. Can you tell your story a little bit before we jump into meat of the book?
No, happy to do it. And, I think one of the reasons I wrote the book was because that, my life was not very much different than a lot of people's growing up.
Yep.
I mean, it's, there's the extremes, kind of like we talk about the left coast and the west coast and the east coast. And everything else in the middle. And most of us live in the middle, right?
Right.
And
right.
My mom and dad, where I was born in Louisiana, raised in Arkansas, and got to Texas fast as I could spell it at age 25, which is, it's pretty good for somebody from Louisiana, Arkansas. Right. But my mom and dad were public school teachers, and they were the first ones in their families to go to college. And so we grew up in kind of an education environment. I had an older brother, a younger sister, and a younger brother. But they were public school teachers in Louisiana and Arkansas, which meant they were kind of in the bottom three or four pay-wise as far as making money. And so while I certainly grew up in a family that prided in education and moving forward, all of us kids have college degrees and two of them have advanced degrees. We really were in a home that focused everything was at the end of the day. Jeremy, was about money. Mm. And it wasn't about the fact that we had so much of it, we didn't know what to do. It was that every decision was based on the lack of money. Yeah. And in some cases, the improper management of what we did have. And then my mom and dad divorced when I was in high school. So I was dealt with that. My younger brother and sister were still, you know, much younger and at home. Obviously, I was getting ready to graduate, and then I went out on my own at age 17, and my mom moved back to Louisiana, Baton Rouge. My dad moved off as well, so I was by myself at age 17 after graduating from high school, with living with a buddy in a garage apartment. And, you know, went to work for a company in our hometown of El Dorado, Arkansas, called Murphy Oil, which is actually a Fortune 500 company. But I went to work for them in the mailroom, so literally, which was literally in the basement. So I did really start on the bottom floor. People say they start on the bottom floor, but literally, I was really under the bottom floor. And you know, and I did that because they would pay for 2/3 of your college tuition if you scored a grade B or higher in a subject. And they had a little junior college there, so I was going to junior college at night while I was working, and met my wife there, and you know, just kind of moved on. And you know, throughout that, I was always driven by making sure that my family, as I had began to start a family, weren't so controlled by finances, that we certainly wanted to do as well as we possibly could, but we also wanted to make sure that we lived within our means in a way that we didn't have to think about that every single day. And so that was my driving thing, is to remove myself from financial mediocrity. And so I was always looking for the next opportunity. I was blessed with a pretty good brain, pretty quick, not necessarily the smartest guy, but pretty quick. My wife was very supportive. We've now been married in a couple of weeks, 44 years.
Wow, that's awesome.
Which is not that unusual for young people from Arkansas, because you just get them, you know, you got to get them early. If you don't get the fourth cousins early, the first cousins come around, and all sorts of issues, Jeremy, with that. But you know, then and we can go into more detail, but then I went on. Realized my last name wasn't Murphy. So went on and, started looking for other jobs and bigger opportunities in other cities, moved to Dallas. We didn't know anybody, had two little kids, ended up working for a bank where I met some people that, kind of worked out. We decided to start our own investment company. I'd kind of worked in the HR retirement plan field. And so we started our own investment company, and just by, very serendipitous, we ended up focusing on managing money for retired commercial airline pilots.
Okay.
And it was a niche. We did it for 30 years, just kind of one after one. We sold the business in 2019 after it had $3 billion under management.
Wow.
And during that time, from about 2012 to 2019, I was serving as chairman of the board, so I wasn't having to be day to day. I actually served in the Texas legislature during that time. So anyway, got three kids, six grandkids. Most people know me now because my daughter has a pretty famous podcast called Relatable. Her name is Allie Beth Stuckey. A lot of people will know her. Yeah. And so that's how I get introduced mostly these days.
That is so funny.
Totally fine.
I was actually watching a video with her today, and she's talking about, you know, the home and what it means to be a Christian family, but specifically a Christian wife. And I had the thought when I was watching that, man, she's so articulate and so clear on these pretty heavy issues that she's very winsome about, very serious, but very, you know, so good at communicating that. That's really interesting. Okay. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because that goes back to then my question about faith. We'll just talk about faith a little bit. Talk about your faith journey, I guess, and then how you would apply that in the various changes of your life and the seasons of your life in raising kids to have such a grasp on that, you know, on that faith and understanding that.
Well, I think that, first of all, a lot of credit goes to my wife, Lisa, for a lot of that. But I was raised in a Christian home. Now, in any home, whether it's Christian or non-Christian, there are things that go on in the home, like the acrimony that ended up between my mom and dad, that in my teenage years, I certainly questioned all of that, right? Mm. My family's been Baptist literally for 300 years. I mean, we have a long Baptist history. So some people say we're recovering from that, but so, and I do remember distinctly, Jeremy, when I was 6 years old, accepting Christ on a Sunday night. And so I believe that was real. To this day, I know that was the real thing that happened. So even though that times were frustrating when we were growing up sometimes with the challenges with our finances and my parents' challenges, and I would stray away a little bit, at least stray away mentally. I never went off on the road where, you know, I'm a recovering drug addict or anything
Right.
My faith certainly became stale because I was having to deal with things that someone my age really couldn't totally comprehend. Mm. So you just kind of look for who to blame, what to do. And so just kind of overwhelming. But I will tell you that every single point in that journey, the background of my faith, I always knew it was there, right? I always knew that would always kind of either prompt me back or hit me back sometimes. And then after I met Lisa, and we knew not too long after we met, I would think within the several months that probably would be a long-term scenario. She was very strong in her faith, even though she only grew up in what I would call a quasi-Christian home. She was very strong in her faith, and her faith and me watching her actions, she never preached to me or anything like that. It kind of renewed me back in my faith. And so from the time, I guess, that we were married, it certainly hasn't been perfect or anything, and certainly I'm not perfect, but I think that our relationship, the grounding of our relationship was always in our faith in Jesus, right? That was our grounding, and our kids knew that from day one. Again, you never know if your kids are going to follow that or not.
Sure.
There's awful, really good Christian parents
that have
kids that go astray, and I don't. After you've raised kids, you understand you don't blame people.
Yeah, that's right. You know? That's right. But our
kids saw that. You know, we did take them to church, but I do think it's important, even when they don't want to go. Sometimes I didn't want to go, right?
Yeah.
And we did engage in talking about spiritual things and things like that. You know, faith related things around the house, and the Bible was always present, and all these types of things. And then I think for us, Jeremy, for Lisa and I think we both were pretty convicted that my dad, in addition to school teacher, was also a minister of music in small churches. Mm. So you could see the good, the bad, and the ugly of a church.
Yeah.
And we were really convicted about, look, we're not going to be perfect on Sunday, but we're going to be the same people on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday and extra that we're going to be on Sunday. And we wanted our kids to see that because so many times what drives kids away from their faith is they see a different mom and dad during the week than they did on Sunday.
That's good.
I think that's really important. I mean, if you're, it's okay not to be the perfect church person on Sunday. In fact, it's better not to be the perfect church person on Sunday if you're going to turn around and be something totally different on the week. Don't do that, right? Just be who you are. And then our kids had a Christian education, and I cannot overemphasize, Lisa and I, for whatever reason, we knew early on when we didn't have any finances to speak of that. And I remember saying this when Justin, our oldest, was just a little boy, saying, I will work overnight at Walmart as a second job if I have to pay for his Christian education. Mm. And that was really important to us. And so what their schools did. Now, if you don't have a Christian influence at home, it probably may not help much.
Right.
But it just reemphasized the things that we were trying to do at home. And, you know, they lucky to have some really good teachers. Allie Beth, our youngest, you know, she was always, you know, pretty aggressive as far as her personality is kind of outgoing personality and what have you. But she's always been a devourer of information. She devours information and has always had a thirst for learning. And I think that's what comes across, you know, in what she's doing now. And so, and Lisa, I will give Lisa a lot of credit. I mean, she, the kids certainly more than me, they saw her not just talk about it. She walked about it. They saw her in the Word every morning. You know, I traveled a lot when I was younger, so they didn't even see me every day.
Yeah.
But they saw her in the Word every morning. They saw her on her knees, and they still see that, and their grandkids see that. So I think that's been our journey. And listen, we've we've had challenges. I mean, we have a son that has autism and epilepsy, and we have had some pretty big arguments with God over all of those issues that have been related to that. Not only his issues, but how even the Christian community sometimes treats people like that, right?
Yeah.
And so certainly not perfect, but we do know that that's our foundation.
Yeah, that is so helpful. It's life is funny. So we have four kids. My oldest is 24. She just recently moved out of the house. She's an accountant here in Southern California. I have a son who is 22, just got married. He's a police officer in our community. And then I have a 15-year-old and a 14-year-old. So we're kind of spread out.
Yeah.
But my wife and I are at that stage of life. We've been married just over 25 years where we've started to and we didn't go out for this, right? We didn't reach out for this, but young couples have started coming to us at church and, hey, would you have dinner? We'd like to talk about the kids, and we've got little kids. And I was talking to my wife about this just last night, a couple at church, great couple at church. They've got great kids, but they asked us to sit down and work through some things with them. And I said, man, it's nuts to try to help people raise kids because, as you said, you know what to do until you have them. And then once you have them, all bets are off and you're doing That's the best true. You can. And there's not like, here are the six things we want to tell you need to do. Every day is different and every child is different. And it's wild. But to your point, consistency, I look back to my family, my parents. I was raised in a Baptist church. My dad's a Baptist pastor, and I pastored for a long time in a Baptist church. so I laugh at recovering from that, right? But you know, people have asked me what was the thing that your parents did right, and that's what I go back to again and again. They were consistent. They didn't put up a front. They didn't pretend. Mm-hmm. I knew their faith was authentic, and you know, my dad got mad sometimes and would apologize, and my parents fought. And I mean, they were normal people, but I never questioned their faith, and that consistency is so important. I've tried to bring that into our family. Beyond that, what would you say to someone who there's so many people struggling and culture is so upside down now? It's very, very challenging to be a Christian parent. And I look at these parents who have young kids, and man, I'll pray for you is what I tell them most of the time. Yeah. But beyond consistency in your home, what are you telling them? What do they need to do? They've got four, five, 6 year old kids. What do they need to do?
What I tell them to do, obviously, is model. I mean, that's the main thing.
Yeah.
Kids, you know.
Yeah.
They not only can repeat everything you say, they can do everything you do just about. So I tell them to model, make sure they're modeling, especially the younger. So let's talk about the younger kids for now. And then what they need to do is they need to proactively engage in the areas of their children's lives that are going to have an impact on them. So they need to be engaged in their church. Mm-hmm. They need to be engaged in their school system, okay, or in the sports system. And it could be, it doesn't have to mean you're doing everything in there, but you need to be engaged to the point that you understand what's going to happen in there even before your kids get in there. And you know the touch point so that if something comes up, what do I need to do? What's the best way to handle this? What's the personality of the lady that's running the children's program at church, right? So that how can I best work with her in case our child is struggling with something? Same way in whatever thing that they have going on. If they wait until the kids are already engaged totally in those to try to catch up, it's difficult, especially in the school system. I would just, you know, you gotta pray about and make your school decisions as early as you can. And then realize that you can adjust if you need to. Like if school didn't work out for somebody and they wanted to homeschool, there's lots of options for that. Or if private school is better for them. But you need to get ahead of that game. That's what happened in our society, Jeremy, especially in the school system. And somewhat in the church, too, by the way. As you know, you hear Allie talk about this a lot, is that we, what I would call basically traditional people, okay, that follow the traditional faith, you know, kind of a small government even type of scenario where we believe, you know, that we follow God's laws. And yes, we're called to follow man's laws as well. But that, you know, just leave us alone and let us raise our families and have our churches and whatever. We are so repulsed by some of the things in society, we stay away from them. And so we turned over our entire education of all of our children to what has turned out to be primarily people that don't believe like we do. And in some ways, we've even done that in our churches, right? The churches that have really come out on the what I would consider, if we say left and right, the far left side of theology. And that's because the we as congregants allowed that to happen, you know? Yeah. And so, and I think we're the ones that God's looking down on and saying, what, you know, I gave you all these opportunities. You're there. The church is the body. What are you doing? And same way in communities, too. So I would just engage is what I tell people to do. And then the second thing, as they get older, this is something Lisa did very well. Harder for me, Jeremy, is that, especially moms and girls, and I think dads and boys probably applies on this as well, is just keep the line of communication open.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times Lisa would, and I didn't ever ask her to tell me everything, but she would say, gosh, I can't believe what Allie wanted to talk to me about tonight, right? I was like, oh my gosh, you know, but you have to, but that line of communication, because these kids, especially now, as they're getting to be tweenagers and teenagers, they're exposed to more stuff than we can ever hope to control.
Yes.
And them being able to come talk to you about it without risk of retribution, so important. I mean, we were, I'll just tell you a couple of stories. We were considered the most ridiculous parents in the world, okay? And it was because that we had a set of standards, and as our kids were going through their 15 to 17, 18-year-old deal, they – even though they were in a Christian school, there were parents in there that were a lot more flexible, let's say, than we were.
Yep.
And but I will tell you, every one of our kids has come back to us and thanked us for that.
Mm.
So you and your wife got to stick together. Sometimes the only friends that you have are going to be each other.
Man, it's that is so good. It's so helpful. I think probably the hardest thing to do as a Christian, if you have a family, is raise your kids. It is the most challenging thing in the world. I'd like to spend more time talking about that. But let's move on to the reason we've all gathered here today. I got sidetracked there. Thank you. That was very, very helpful. Let's talk about your book, The Little Red Wagon.
Yeah.
I read this specifically, and this is what kind of, I guess, got a hold of me. It isn't a lack of talent or ability that often holds us back. It's the lure of the safe, comfortable path that threatens to keep us stuck in a rut of fear and negativity, speeding along with no clear destination or passively catching a ride instead of taking initiative and action. And that's, something that I have struggled with. I think that's probably a human struggle, but something we talk about all of the time on this show is there are opportunities to stop moving forward. I think this is why parenting is so important to me, because if there's a big opportunity to just say, forget it, I can't do it anymore. It's in raising our kids. You know, the obstacles are big, the trials and the past sometimes are overwhelming, and we can just say, forget it. But we need to move forward in that. But that's every area of our lives. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this a little bit. What caused you to write this, and using this analogy of the little red wagon, how do you kind of convey this principle of moving forward?
Well, I think when you think about a wagon, you know, it's a toy that most of us had and still is around today. And it's very, very simple. And that's why it's been so popular in that it provides multiple functions, the way I look at it. Okay. So that when you look at the different parts of the wagon, you look at the handle, you look at the front wheels, you look at the back wheels, and you look at the container. Well, all of those have different functions, right? The container carries things, the back wheels, you know, you'd be dragging if you didn't have it. The front wheels follow what the handle's doing, and they can turn a little bit. And then whoever's holding the handle is directing the path. And I think that's really the way it is in life, right? What happens, though, Jeremy, and especially in men, okay? Especially in men. So we believe that we have to hold the handle in everything we do. And so we therefore never give ourselves a chance to rest or to be carried by somebody else sometimes, or to just provide the effort so that we can learn the path along the way. And what I try to tell people is that, look, there's no special formula. I mean, maybe if you're born with the talent of, Mahomes or a Tiger Woods or somebody like that, that's a special, God-given talent that you have. But most of us don't have that, right? I tell people all the time, I'm slightly above average in a lot of things, but I'm not great in anything. But I don't stink in most things. I'm just slightly above average. Yep. And for those people, which I think is most of us, it's really just a matter of understanding your position. And I call it position in the wagon. All right. There are many times when, like, for an example would be like when I got into politics, Jeremy, I didn't know anything about it. I had never run before. We had voted and we had donated to some causes we believed in. But I was not engaged in the local political game. I feel a little bad about that because I think I should have been at least more aware of what was going on. But when I decided to run, it was kind of in the, in the beginning of the second term of the Obama years. And so there was a lot of concern going on for conservatives like myself. And so I decided to run. I didn't know anything about it. So what I did is I hired a political consultant through some advice of some other people. And I told him, I said, look, I'm going to do everything you tell me to do. Yeah. All right. And I'm not, because I don't know anything about it. So basically I climbed in his wagon.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
And he was carrying me along. And when I learned a little bit, then I could get out and push the wagon again. All I was doing was pushing. So I wasn't controlling anything other than if I pushed it hard enough, then we were making progress. And so I had to know that even though I had been the head of a company that was managing billions of dollars under management, I didn't know anything about this thing. So I had to get off the handle, get back in the wagon, or get to another piece. Most people think that once I've got the handle in one thing, then I should be doing it in everything. And that's just not true. Another example would be, I told you that we had a son that has autism and epilepsy. Well, when we raise our kids, and you're just experiencing this, is that we kind of raise them so that to be independent and get out on their own, right?
Yep.
And, do their deal. If they need us, then we're there for them, but kind of move through life. Well, and Lisa and I felt the same way. We got married young and we had kids young. And so we were really looking forward. And this is, I'm a little bit ashamed of this, actually, Jeremy. We were looking forward to, having some time while we were still young where it's just us, right?
Yeah.
Because I was 19. She was 20. We were married. We had our first child at 21. So we've had kids, the whole time. And and we knew Daniel's challenges, okay? And he pretty high functioning and could do some things independent and whatever, but I will tell you, I was a little, not at him, but just in the whole situation. So I guess with God and just the whole scenario, I was a little resentful when we couldn't have that experience of just having time on our own. And that, some things Daniel could do and then it would mess up. And so we'd have to crawl back in the wagon. So we have to also be prepared for, especially in our families, to take people back in our wagon also. And that's just the different things that we have to do.
I love that analogy because I can picture it and it makes so much sense. But here's the question, here's the question that goes along with that. How do you know when to let go of the handle and get back in the wagon? So you started by saying men struggle because they get a hold of the handle and they never take a break for themselves. How do you know when you need to adjust to another position? You're in the same role, perhaps, you're in the family, but it's time to let somebody else pull for a little while whatever. How do you decide that or understand that?
Yeah, well, I think you have to be honest with yourself, okay? And then you have to have close advisors around you. In some cases, family-wise, it might be your wife. And in other cases, it may be some other mentors. I think having mentors is really, really important in that. And you have, but the main thing is you have to be honest with yourself. Do I really know enough about the situation to lead us, or am I just doing it because my ego tells me I need to do that? Some of the most brave things we can do as men is to realize when we have to seek help from others, right? Or seek other people to help carry us along the way or say, hey, you know, one of the greatest positions to ever be in is to be the number two person behind a very strong leader. And there have been many times in my life that that's the role that I play. I enjoy playing that, right? You can get so much more accomplished sometimes, right? Because you're not having to deal with the headwinds. You know, the front wheels don't have to deal with the headwinds. Yeah, the guy holding the handle does, but they still get to have the same view.
Sure.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure.
And that's kind of, sometimes you have to be that way. And then I think it's okay to be vulnerable. You can be vulnerable with your wife for sure, but you have to have other men around you that you are vulnerable with. And that's when I talk about in my book about having mentors. And I don't believe you should have the same mentor for every area of your life.
Yeah, that's good.
You should have mentors in each area of your life, and they may change over time. I've been very fortunate. I think that one thing the Lord did for me when my mom and dad separated, my dad and I's relationship was not that great, was to seek out mentors.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't make me feel less. I think some people, their pride won't let them do that. Right. And I think if as you guys begin counseling younger couples and everything, I think, Jeremy, one thing you could tell the men is, look, don't let your pride get in the way of the blessing that God has for you through seeking the mentorship of others.
Yeah, man, that's so good. Another thought that comes to mind is, sometimes in my life, I've had these times where I feel like I have figured some things out. I've gotten a hold of the handle, so to speak, and I'm going the right direction. And there are probably other areas that I should be involved in, but I feel really comfortable leading here. Mm-hmm. I know how to pull the wagon here, but I don't exactly know how to do that. And I'm not willing to let go of the handle. I'm not willing to get in the back of the wagon somewhere else. And, you know, so we started this nonprofit, Mighty Oaks. We started 12 years ago. And in the beginning, you know, there were a couple of us, we didn't know anything. We were trying to figure it out. We grew through it. But over the years, you know this, but with any growing organization, you eventually fill just about every role. And I have struggled over the years to go, well, I'm really comfortable here. I know how to do this. I'm not going to go over there because I have to learn it all over again. How do you fight against that? Because I think growth is really looking around saying, all right, where can I learn now? And where can I go now? And what do I need to do now? It's so easy to get comfortable right here. I'm an expert right here. And I'm not willing to go get back in another wagon or start pushing again or whatever. How do you adjust to that or deal with that? I mean, the exhaustion, the mental fatigue, the spiritual issues, the emotional and relational issues. How do you deal with all of that?
Well, I think sometimes you do need to stay in your lane, because sometimes there are opportunities that are out there that seem good, but take you away from what your lane is, whatever that happens to be. We had that a lot in our business. People would say, well, look, if you can do all this great things for pilots, why aren't you doing it for doctors?
Right.
Or somebody, and I would say, well, because we haven't talked to every pilot in the world yet. When we do that, then we're going to figure that out.
Right.
But what I would say too, is I have a chapter in my book called Taking the Next Uncomfortable Step. And one of the things that I would encourage my kids to do and people that work with me to do is, what's that next uncomfortable step in that situation that interestingly, Jeremy, you know, it's there. Okay. You know what it is, right? For example, when you said, hey, I know I probably should get over here and get in the, you know, be the back wheels or be the cargo, but I really don't want to do that. Well, what I encourage people to do is just take that next uncomfortable step, right? Mm. For example, you remember when Paul began his ministry, okay? When Paul began his ministry, the first door that he went in towards Asia was shut for him, okay? And that's where he thought he should go. But then because he took that step, okay, and he said, well, what about what ends up being Europe? Okay.
Yeah.
He ends up taking that uncomfortable step.
Yeah.
All right. Rather than just pushing, you know, continue to push down this road, he takes the uncomfortable step of, okay, I'm going to go over here. And that's where the blessing is. A lot of times the blessing is on the other, because comfortable steps, Jeremy, are all about faith, right?
Yeah.
They're all about faith.
Yeah.
Now, it can be as small as making the next call, right? I'm going to pick up the phone to make the next call if it's a business, or it could be having that conversation with your spouse or your kids or you know, a coworker or something like that. But it's all about saying, okay, I really believe, and again, in prayer through prayer, God wants me to be involved in this. I'm not comfortable in it. What's the next uncomfortable step that I can take? And then let God work, right? Let's see what happens after that.
That's good. Man, that is so helpful. Ron, there's so much here. We could talk all day, but where can people get your book? Where can people follow you and continue this conversation by you know, following
so
the work that you do?
My book looks like this, okay? It's kind of a cool design, awesome. I think, called Life Lessons from the Little Red Wagon. And they can get it anywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. They can get it on my website, ronsimmons.com. I give them a little discount if they come on my website and order it. Or email me, ron@ronsimmons.com. Happy to visit with, I've had so many emails after I've been doing this, just people like yourself, you know, don't have a podcast, but they think the same things you're thinking. They'll have a question. I'm happy to do that. Also, if you like listening to books, I have a very unique scenario in this book. First of all, I have John Maxwell, who a lot of people would know is a pretty famous writer. He did
that guy's
going to
make it.
Book.
He's going to make it if he keeps trying. If he stays with the wagon, he'll
figure
it out.
Just keep doing what you're doing. And so he reads the foreword, but also I have Ronald Reagan reading part of my book.
Wow.
President Reagan. I mean, it's hard to call people. I'm not saying I have the power of resurrection. I'm just saying that there is a section in there that he reads, so you'll enjoy that.
That may be the best tease I've ever heard. Go get the book if you want to hear Ronald Reagan speak. We'll go check that out. And I do love listening to books, so I'll read it and listen to it just to hear Ronald Reagan. Ron, thank you so much. Really appreciate it, appreciate the work that you are doing. It's so helpful to be able to talk to folks who see clearly and can kind of lay out a path forward, and we need that. Yeah. So thank you for doing it. Really appreciate your time. Yeah. Very grateful for that conversation. And man, Ron is such a blessing, so encouraging and so helpful. There are a lot of people in the world who can identify problems and struggles and challenges, and they can tell you what those are going to be, maybe because they've walked through them. But there are a lot less people in the world who know how to look at the challenges, reflect on the challenges, and then lay out a path, steps that others can take to work through them in a meaningful way. And I'm very grateful for Ron and not only his willingness to do that, but his ability to do that so clearly. And very grateful for that. Please go and get the book. You can listen to the book, or you can go to Ron's website, ronsimmons.com, and check out his work there. So please go ahead and do that. Take some time today. Go over to Life Audio, lifeaudio.com. There you'll find other incredible podcasts, great hosts there, and shows that will be an encouragement to you as well. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it and look forward to talking to you next time. Many of our veterans feel they need to fight their battles alone. This self-isolation has led to the staggering statistic of more than 20 veterans taking their lives every day. The mission of Mighty Oaks is to eradicate the veteran suicide epidemic and help our warriors change their legacies. We've been able to help over 4,000 veterans and first responders by equipping them with the tools they need to live the lives they were created to live. Our faith-based, peer-to-peer approach has one of the highest success rates of any program available today, offering hope and understanding to those who need it most. By aligning their lives to biblical principles, these men and women are able to lead their families, their communities, and our nation. It's your generosity that can make a difference in the lives of the men and women who have fought for our country and our freedoms. Now that they're home, don't let them fight alone. Learn more at MightyOaksPrograms.org.
Is life feeling chaotic? I get it. I'm Rachel Wojo, host of the Untangling Life podcast. Don't miss the passionate encouragement and faith-based resources you need to help you clear your head and calm your heart. As Shell says, it feels like Rachel always knows what I need to hear. She keeps it real and is so humble. Her podcast is just the cherry on top. Enjoy Untangling Life with Rachel Wojo on lifeaudio.com or your favorite podcast app now.